You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, CookUnity delivers. Made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. CookUnity was made for adventurous eaters. With 160-plus award-winning chefs curating an ever-expanding menu of small batch meals. Get ready to eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Their roster of Food Network alums, James Beard Award winners, and acclaimed restaurateurs balance bold flavors and nutrition in their handcrafted meals, which are freshly prepared, delivered to your door, and never frozen. Get what you're craving. Try the freshest, best-tasting meal delivery made by your favorite celebrity chefs. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter code CRAVE before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's free premium meals for life at cookunity.com/crave.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I mentioned that Dermot Gavin, horticulturalist, garden designer, Chelsea Gold Medal winner, is with us with, as it turns out, a very timely item.
It is. It's very interesting, and obviously we didn't know what the news of the past week and last night. But this, I suppose I'm including this particular story because of what's happening in the US at the moment. And you never know with ice, with the
people being lifted on the streets, and then maybe their families not knowing even where they've
absolutely
been taken.
And in some of the cases with this story, that's exactly what happened. So we're talking about 1941, the morning of the 7th of December, Pearl Harbor. So yeah. Japan drops bombs on Pearl Harbor, which is in Hawaii. And the following day, the US entered the war. Now, the reason that Japan dropped those bombs was to take advantage of a situation that a lot of the warships were elsewhere, and they were on. They wanted to take over and become a superpower. Other Asian places. They needed oil, they needed influence, and they decided to do this. But they miscalculated. Anyway, after Pearl Harbor,
did they actually believe they could isolate Pearl Harbor as a, if you like, a wartime incident, full stop, and that America would not declare war on them?
They did. So they absolutely miscalculated, but America was determined and declared war on Japan. Got involved in the Second World War the following day. So that was that. Now, there were a lot of Japanese living in the US, and what the Americans decided was to introduce internment. They did it initially, almost immediately for some people. So some men who were maybe fishermen were rounded up because they reckoned that they could have been a foreign influence. They were the enemy. Interesting that they introduced internment, though, for Oriental people, for Japanese people, but not for German people and not for Italians. I suppose the populations were too big. Mm-hmm. And interesting that it wasn't introduced in Hawaii itself, where the attack took place, but it was on the mainland of the United States, and a lot of this happened in California.
I mean, there's an argument that really says, what is Hawaii doing as part of the United States anyway? I mean, ethnically, it doesn't seem to belong there. But then the United States at one time belonged to the Native American population and not to the Europeans.
Yes.
So where do you start the clock? Anyway, they decided, having entered the war, that they needed to round up people that might be fifth columnists.
So this idea of internment, not only for Japanese, for kind of first generation, but American citizens, because quite a few of the, two-thirds of the people that they rounded up were actually
American
citizens.
So these were people who got their birthright, as is in the Constitution. Born in America, you're American.
Yes, or naturalized or whatever. But there had become cases where it was impossible for Japanese people to acquire American citizens. Citizenship and whatever. So they were all told to, initially, as I say, some people were rounded up and shipped out to camps with their families not knowing where they were. And then the entire population, if you were either Japanese or second generation or indeed third generation Japanese, you were told to report to certain places.
How many people?
Holding places. 127,000.
Wow.
I mean, just really incredible. So those people were only allowed to bring what they could carry. They had to sell off all their possessions. Some people...
So at bargain prices,
at bargain prices. Some smashed their possessions so that they couldn't be sold. So they'd worked very hard. They'd worked very hard in farming, in agriculture, in fishing, in canning factories. They'd worked very hard in education. And none of that was accounted anything. They were just told to report.
And some glee among farmers that some very efficient Japanese producers were now no longer producing.
They were known for being very industrious, so there was quite a degree of racism involved in this, that they were different, they worked too hard, that they were very successful, and that they would be shipped out. And not only that, the neighbouring farmers maybe could acquire the land and the houses and whatever and knock down prices.
Now, where were the camps set up, or were they all over the United States?
They were in 10 different locations. The one that we're particularly going to talk about today was about 230 miles north of Los Angeles, in the eastern shadow of the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Now, the reason we're talking about it is that horticulture and agriculture became part of the way of life there.
So absolutely. So initially these families were gathered together and they were shipped off temporarily to fairgrounds or to racetracks or whatever, where they would sleep in cubicles with no cover. Then they were shipped off to these purpose-built camps, and immediately, within weeks, within days really, they began to organise themselves. They set up classes, they set up a newspaper, and they set up different associations, because there were 10,000 people in these camps. They were internment camps. They were
Small towns, really.
Small towns, badly built, badly insulated.
Now, you're putting pictures up of these. I'm looking at the picture, and you can see the mountains in the background. And these are just sheds. I mean, they're made of timber. They're a single story. They're very much like any of the movies we've seen of the prisoner of war camps
that
the Germans built.
That's what you think of, you know, Escape from Colditz, all that sort of thing. Shacks built to house people with absolute no privacy for anything. Families were allowed to be together. They were given very basic areas, canvas areas to sleep on, but there was no privacy. No privacy in the loos, no privacy for family life, whatever. The shacks that they were housed in were very badly built. They weren't... I said dust would come up through the floors. Very hot during the summer, very, very cold during the winter. So not good living conditions.
So the people then, as you say, industrious, they made sure that they kept education going as best they could. And then they started to plant.
And within weeks, they started to plant. So they started to plant in two ways. They discovered that in the mess halls, the food they were given was very meagre. The rations were very meagre, and everybody ate together. So they would bring their own seeds and plant the crops that they knew from their homelands, or American crops, indeed, from where they had been farming. And others just created really beautiful gardens. So Japanese gardens are all about simplicity, but also they're about their culture. So they would gather stones, they'd gather driftwood, they would dig out ponds, and they would create arches, and they would create bridges, and slowly but surely, amazing gardens began to emerge in these camps.
Now, when the war was over, how long before they were all released?
They were released pretty soon after the war was over. They were given just kind of a few dollars each, and I think $25 each, and off you go. And of course, many of them had nothing to go back to. And many of them didn't talk about the experience, especially the older ones did not talk about their experience, because it was deemed to be a shameful kind of period of their history. They wanted to forget about it. So much like soldiers returning from world wars in this part of the world, they ignored it and they didn't talk about their families. Or from newborns who came afterwards, it was never mentioned.
Now, all of these gardens, did they go back to the desert effectively, or were any of them maintained?
No, none of them were maintained, so all of them were reclaimed by the desert. But the reclaiming still left the outlines. If you were to take satellite images, you would see dips in the ground, and you would begin to make out stone outlines, or these arches. So whereas the shacks, the places that they were accommodated in, rotted away or were taken down or were used by for storage facility by part of the United States government's, the gardens slowly disappeared. And then in the 1970s, some Japanese people really began to ask parents and grandparents, tell me about what this camp was. And initially, the parents didn't want to talk about it. So one year, maybe a dozen people went and tried to find the place where these camps, and they began to make an annual pilgrimage, and they began to reclaim the space as part of their culture.
So are there gardens today that you can visit?
And now this has happened. They began to campaign to the US government because they felt this was a big part of United States history, and they never wanted anything like this type of racist internment to happen again. So now there are gardens. Now the Parks Department took it over in the United States. Ronald Reagan declared it a national monument, and the gardens, some of the gardens, especially in the main camps, were reinstated.
And they said it could never happen again.
And they said it could never happen again. And one element of this is happening right in front of our eyes on our television screens. I listened to the story of a survivor who passed away just a few years ago on a podcast on the way in here today. And she said it wouldn't happen again because this time there would be television recording it. There is television recording it, and stuff like this is happening.
Alligator Alley, etc., etc.
Absolutely. So gardens are and have always been political acts.
Chairman Gavin, thank you very much for joining us. And that's all we have time for today. All our items are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the Newstalk app, powered by GoLad. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On Newstalk.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.